Award-winning journalists. New York Times bestsellers. No topic out of bounds. No opinions left unsaid. An institution for sports talk and information. This is The Sports Reporters. Here's Mike Lupica and Mitch Albom.
I'm Mike Lupica, MLB.com and the New York Daily News.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, and this is the Sports Reporters podcast, the podcast version of the long-running TV show on Sunday mornings on ESPN. Normally three, we're going to do two today, and it's going to be a bit of a load because there's a lot to talk about. We're going to begin with the Jackson 2, Deshaun and Steven, who have made a lot of news unnecessarily in the last few days. For some reason, Deshaun Jackson decided it was necessary over the weekend to tweet out several different social media posts about Jewish people, the tired old trope about their power and them controlling things, and then attributing quotes to Adolf Hitler that actually weren't Hitler's, but he was saying they were Hitler's. He touched every square on anti-Semitism that you can basically touch. And then was defended by Steven Jackson, who doesn't play the same sport as Deshaun Jackson. Deshaun Jackson plays for the NFL's Philadelphia Eagles. Steven Jackson, a retired NBA player. And Steven Jackson jumps into the fray defending him and saying, you know, he wasn't wrong in what he was saying. And those who were misconstruing this as hate are all wrong. So, Mike, this all struck people as like, are you kidding? At this particular time, with this particular sensitivity,
yes,
these things need to be, these things are being said. And yet, as of this moment, when we're talking on Thursday morning, the Philadelphia Eagles and the NFL haven't done anything punitive about this.
And Mitch, this is an example. You just touched on it. Put this in the context of the modern country and the modern world, okay? And you can't just write this off to dopey things on Twitter. But this is a festival of what social media has created in this country, where somebody says something just incredibly boneheaded and tone deaf, especially in the context of the modern world, okay? And then, you know, even before it gets a chance to go away, and before we have a chance to ask the Eagles the hard questions about, hey, what are you going to do about it other than call the comments absolutely appalling?
Right.
Steven Jackson, who somehow is perceived as a rising media star, jumps in and Mitch, here's my he's talking and we, Mitch, how many times have we said this over the years? When you have to give this many explanations of something, you said something incredibly stupid, okay? And when he says that he misspoke about the things that Deshaun was correct about, Mitch, what was Deshaun correct about?
Right. Exactly. He wasn't correct about anything. Amongst the things that Deshaun Jackson sent out, white Jews will blackmail America. They will extort America. Their plan for world domination won't work if the Negroes know who they were. He's actually tweeting out something that he thinks comes from Hitler using the word Negroes. Then he posts several things from Louis Farrakhan. Okay, now, if you are Jewish, Louis Farrakhan is the current version of the person running around the world as the leading anti-Semite, or one of the leading anti-Semites. In speeches, but mind you, not speeches made 20 years ago, or 30 years ago, or even 5 years ago, but speeches made in 2017 and 2018, 2 and 3 years ago. Louis Farrakhan is out calling Jews Satan.
Yep.
The satanic Jew,
yep.
referencing them as termites. The Jews are responsible, the direct words, for all filth and degenerate behavior that Hollywood is putting out, turning men into women and women into men. That's a double Scrabble bonus point, because now you've insulted homosexuals, transgenders, and Jews. These are the words of Louis Farrakhan. So if a white person, a white athlete, were to basically, I'm trying to think of, yeah, but basically whoever a KKK leader is currently right now, or the most insulting anti-black person in America, in the world, this is what it's akin to when you start putting up Louis Farrakhan quotes for a Jewish person. And Mike, as a Jewish person, I could tell you that this is old news, because anti-Semitism never gets the same vitriolic reaction.
And it never goes away.
It's the oldest form of hatred in the world.
Yep.
The oldest form of racism and hatred in the world. And yet it never gets the same seriousness, never gets the same repercussions, never gets the same reaction. I'm waiting for LeBron James, the conscience of sports, to have any kind of comment on this. He certainly was there when Drew Brees made his, despite a career's worth of being a good guy and a guy on the right side of everything in history, Drew Brees made a comment about not kneeling because it was disrespect to the flag to him. LeBron James was all over that. But DeSean Jackson could come out and basically call Jews the problem of the world in a distinct language and invoke Hitler. And he's still sitting there employed as a member of the Philadelphia Eagles without even as much as a suspension or a fine. They didn't even use the words, Mike, and as a Jewish person, I found this offensive. They didn't even use the words hate speech when they were talking about what he said. They said it was appalling. And they haven't done. I'm amazed because Jeffrey Lurie is Jewish and the general manager of the Philadelphia Eagles is Jewish. And all I can think about is that Lurie boxed himself in to some degree with Riley Cooper 7 years ago. And maybe Lurie feels like, well, because I didn't fire Riley Cooper from the team 7 years ago, I can't somehow take action against DeSean Jackson. That is lame thinking.
And Mitch, what Steven Jackson now portrays himself as Rosa Parks because he knew George Floyd, right? He knew George Floyd. And so here's what he says to Don Lemon on CNN. I've been out here fighting for justice and equality. And I was speaking on equality, why they wasn't handling Cooper and DeSean Jackson any other way, as you just said. Okay. Mitch, is this not classic whataboutism?
Yeah, I mean,
a festival, Mitch. It's a festival of whataboutism. Like I said, they can twist it how they want to. And you want to say, Stephen, how many times are you going to explain yourself? Because we understood you perfectly. It's like the old joke about the woman next to Winston Churchill at a party, and she farts, and then she drags her chair across the floor, and Churchill says, ma'am, we understood you perfectly the first time. There's no need to repeat it. Okay. Like I said, they can twist it how they want to. You didn't hear a word out of my mouth saying I hate Jews. You didn't hear a word out of my mouth saying I'm supporting Hitler. They can twist it how they want. I don't hate nobody. I've been standing up for everybody. I didn't get that feeling, but it apparently was. Yeah. Yeah. I'm a continue to, and that's just the end of it. Well, no, Stephen.
Get to say when it's the end of it.
You don't get to say. And when Showtime, who's got this guy on a video podcast, when do they weigh in about this? Maybe I've missed it. Okay,
they issued a kind of tepid statement. They didn't fire him, which has certainly happened to for people for lesser insults have been fired, have lost their jobs, have lost their endorsement deals. Listen to that explanation, Mike, that you just gave, and compare that to Drew Brees' bend-over-backwards apologies the minute he was called out. Does that sound the same? And Brees still wasn't forgiven. But, I mean, Brees went on one show after another, mea culpa, I didn't understand, I need to listen more. Where's the I need to listen more statements from DeSean Jackson and from Steven Jackson? No, it's a defense. You didn't understand me. It's typical whatism, the same thing that white people get criticized for all the time about, well, if you were black or if I were white, or if we said the exact same thing. And by the way, in addition to what you're pointing out, Steven Jackson did an Instagram live thing where apparently isn't getting a lot of attention, but the Washington Post wrote about it, where he basically went on this Instagram live thing in exchange with somebody and said, the Jews are the richest. You know who the Rothschilds are? They control all the banks. This is the same old typical anti-Semitic line, and he was still espousing it yesterday. So he wasn't apologizing, not in any shape or form.
And Mitch, if you're going to be the third man into a hockey fight, okay, you're going to defend DeSean Jackson. It's like all of a sudden we're talking about him instead of the guy who started this with DeSean Jackson. And then to make things even better, okay, the cherry on top of the whipped cream, Jackson falls back on Steven Jackson falls back on my Jewish friends that I talked to today.
Oh,
so what he's
that.
Saying is some of my best friends, Mitch, some of his best friends are Jewish, okay? And they've signed off on this. Nobody signed off on it. Nobody thinks it's any... It, he's... DeSean Jackson started this with a series of stupid comments. Mitch, it would be like if in the modern world, in the now, so a John Wayne type actor gave the interview that he gave to Playboy
right,
back in the day the, and
right,
said,
about,
I, right, exactly. I support white supremacy.
Right, or said that African Americans are inherently not as good as white people, or there's a physiological makeup, or a Jimmy the Greek statement. You know, yeah. Why they
they're
can't
bred
swim
to be great or, athletes. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, that's how stupid these comments are. That's how redolent they are of that type of thinking of a old, past, tired anti-Semitism trope. And he repeats them on Instagram. So as far as I'm concerned, Stephen Jackson has lost all credibility to talk about this. I don't care how many Don Lemon interviews he does. When he went back on this Instagram Live thing and said this comment, that's all you need to know about him and his stance. And by the way, even with Riley Cooper, which was 7 years ago,
seven
in 2013.
Yep.
Riley Cooper, for those of you who don't remember, was at a concert. A country music concert, I think. He was, I believe, inebriated. He got into some kind of argument with a security guard.
Yep.
And somebody was filming it, and he used the N-word, yelling at the security guard to let him in or something.
Yep.
All right? Not a forgivable thing, not a in any way. He did the whole mea culpa and all the rest of
got
the
night fined,
football
got
players.
Got fined.
Yep. DeSean Jackson hasn't even gotten fined.
Nope.
I think he had to go to counseling of some kind. That hasn't happened to DeSean Jackson. Nothing has happened to DeSean Jackson. Nothing.
And
so you can't even use that example. And 7 years ago. And Mike, 7 years ago and now is two different universes. I'm sorry. So you cannot compare 2013 to 2020. We are in a heightened environment and here.
Mitch, I want to circle back to something you said earlier, and we keep referencing this, but before I do, I just want to remind you that almost from the beginning, we are sponsored by Geico. Did you know that right now, Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of the money Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your dog to make you breakfast in bed with Belgian waffles and fresh fruit compote? As nice as that sounds, that's probably never going to happen. But at least there's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more. Mitch, the Drew Brees thing, obviously he's a way bigger star than DeSean Jackson is. He's a way bigger star than Steven Jackson ever hoped to be on his best day. But Mitch, he got the shit kicked out of him. Okay. He got the shit kicked out of him. And do I agree with what he said? I don't, but oh my God, look at what happened to Drew Brees and his own image, Mitch, in the space of what? At warp speed, in the space of 24, 48, 72 hours, okay? And then he went to social media and continued to apologize and to explain where he was going forward. And Mitch, that was the difference between the world of Riley Cooper and the world that we're living in now. And for the two Jacksons, as you call them, the Jackson Two, to be this tone deaf about the conversation we are trying to have in this country about social justice, forget about what DeSean Jackson said. He ought to get fined for being that out of step. But again, that's the world we live in. That's not just the business of sports, but we deal in the business of sports. Somebody says something stupid, and here we are days later, not just talking about it, Mitch, but waiting for the Philadelphia Eagles and the National Football League, which wants you to believe that they got religion about social justice, even this late in the church service. When the hell are they going to speak up about this?
Right. Absolutely. And Stephen Jackson, by the way, added in this comment yesterday on Wednesday. I don't know nothing about Hitler, and I could give a blank about Hitler. Well, you know what? You should learn something about Hitler. Because if we're in a country that's taking down statues of every Confederate general from 150, 200 years ago, and every and founding fathers from 200 years ago, and we're taking them down because apparently we know so much about who they were and that they were had racist overtones or racist thoughts or whatever, then you need to know about the most evil person on the planet, who, by the way, killed amongst the people that he killed wasn't just Jews. It was pretty much anybody who wasn't Aryan. And I'm sure that included black people from different countries or races that got caught up in it. You need to know who Adolf Hitler is. You can't live in this world without knowing who Adolf Hitler is. So to say that, I don't know nothing about Hitler, and I could give a bleep about Hitler, is an insult to Jewish people and Christian people and gypsies and everybody else who was slaughtered at the hands of this guy, not in the 1800s or 1619, but in 1937, 8, 9, 40, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There are people still alive with numbers on their wrists that have been stitched into them, not grandparents or great-grandparents or great-great-great-great-grandparents who were slaves, but people who are alive right now with these numbers on the wrist, one of whom, a 94-year-old Holocaust survivor, invited DeShaun Jackson to go with him to go view a concentration camp, the remains of them over in Europe. He ought to take that person up on that offer and learn. There is not just one form of hatred going on in the world. There is not just one form of racism or one particular group going on in the world. It is not just a black-white world. And if you are going to claim to be about love for people, you better learn who Adolf Hitler is. And saying, I don't care about him and I don't know nothing about him, is an insult in and of itself.
Mitch, this is obviously not an equivalency, but it just shows you what a lack of perspective we do get from young athletes and now aging young athletes in this country. Do you remember? It reminds me of when Vince Coleman was asked about Jackie Robinson back in the day. Okay. And he said, I don't know nothing about him. Why are you asking me about Jackie Robinson? And I'm thinking, okay, you're an African-American baseball player and you don't know who Jackie Robinson is. And now you're Steven Jackson and you want to talk about the Jewish experience and you come out and say you don't know who Adolf Hitler is. Okay. I mean, it's like they're, Mitch, sometimes it's like they're the unintended kings of self-parody. And that's what we're getting here. But this is dangerous sort of thinking. And they both ought to shut up. And now the Eagles and the NFL should speak up. All right, listen, there's a lot going on in sports, Mr. Album. Do you want to start with what happened at Stanford? Or do you want to start in colleges with what happened in the Ivy League?
Well, both of them are related to coronavirus.
Yep.
And if you've had any doubt that coronavirus will have a long-lasting effect on institutions beyond just the 2-3 months that we thought that was enough and we're done with it, witness what has happened in both of these things that Mike just referenced. At Stanford University, they cut out 11 of 36 sports. That is nearly a third of their sports, including, you know, some pretty well wrestling and rowing and squash and sailing and things that Stanford is you know, good at and has a history of. And they say that it's not tenable to sustain these sports in the age of COVID-19. Now, Mike, Stanford's situation and what's happened with the Ivy League, which I think is going to happen with other conferences, are two different things.
Yes.
Let's talk about the Stanford cuts for a second here, because I want to say that I don't know their economics. It's the first thing I'm going to say. I don't know their economics. But I understand that when they said that these 11 programs, 240 athletes, 22 coaches who were affected, built by more than, this is their quote, 4,000 alumni whose contributions led to 20 national championships, 26 Olympic medals, and an untold number of academic and professional achievements. These are the sports that they're cutting out. They say that they are not financially tenable. They also mentioned, they talked about like their popularity. They talked about how successful they were. Like, are they going to win championships? So out of curiosity, I went and looked at the endowment for Stanford University.
Yes.
And it currently sits at close to $28 billion.
Yeah.
The tuition for Stanford University is listed at about $51,000-$52,000 per year. And last I looked, they're not discounting that for online courses. So, again, I don't know their economics. I just know if I was a Stanford student or I was one of the people on those teams, I would be looking at as, okay, coronavirus certainly tipped this in some direction, but is this also an economic way of just ridding yourself of some things that aren't bringing in money? They didn't lose the football team.
Oh, no.
They didn't lose a basketball team.
Nope.
Now, again, I want to be very careful because I don't know. And if they say, no, you know, yes, it really is. The coronavirus has really affected our finances that way. Okay. I'll say, all right, I'll accept you for your word. But this is not, Stanford's not a poor place. For Stanford to be the first prominent school to be cutting these programs, and there have been some others, but I mean,
This is the most dramatic, though. This is far and away the most dramatic.
Yeah, basically a third of your sports programs. They are a very rich school to be doing this. So either they're just being preemptive and prudent with their finances, or things are really a lot worse than we're even understanding at American universities.
But Mitch, you just said it, okay? I know somebody with a relative at Princeton, okay? And they told me yesterday that the endowment at Princeton, I may be wrong about this, and it might be as high as $40 million, okay? $40 million. Mm-hmm. And which is enough money, Mitch, to pay for everybody's education forever, okay? And to fund every sports program forever. So we have a right to be cynical about this decision. And we've talked plenty, Mitch, how many times have we talked here about how these football programs, and it's not like we're talking about Alabama or Florida or you know, Clemson here, okay? This is Stanford, and they have a fine program, they have a fine tradition, they go to Rose Bowls, they're occasionally a contender for the national championship, even though they don't make the tournament, okay? But if Stanford is doing this, You first of all, you see, Mitch, how important college football money is to America's colleges and universities, right? I mean,
I
think you said this, or I said this, somebody said this, okay? Not only do the football programs support the other sports programs, they support the schools sometimes, okay?
They build the libraries, they build the research centers, they help pay for salaries, absolutely.
There's an old Dan Jenkins line. You want to build a new nuclear reactor? Find a running back who can run the 40 and 4.4. Okay, it's pure Jenkins. But yeah, but this is smoke. You know, this is smoke in the distance. Okay, they're not going to be the first sport, and maybe other schools are going to be liberated by this. Just say, well, Stanford did it, we can do it, and get away with it in the name of we're just another victim of coronavirus. But not when there's that much money under the bed.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, here are the sports, by the way. Men and women's fencing, field hockey, lightweight rowing, men's rowing, co-ed and women's sailing, squash, synchronized swimming, men's volleyball, and wrestling. Some more recognizable to people than others, but remember, this is Stanford. You know, I mean, sailing and squash and synchronized swimming. By the way, I don't mean, you know, I'm not making light of this. How much money does it cost to have a synchronized swimming team? You've already got the pool, okay? You're not killing swimming.
You've already put the chlorine in the pool.
You put the chlorine in the pool, so it's some costumes and then the coaching staff. I mean, I'm looking at some of these sports. I'm saying, really?
Yeah, us.
These
Wait,
are the
you're
ones
picking
that have
on
to go?
Us, right? You're picking on us.
I mean, men's volleyball, you know, they don't wear a lot of equipment. You already got the nets. I don't know. It's some of these things. I say, how much money could they be saving by doing this? Now, I understand, you know, sailing, okay, you're involving with boats, that could be expensive. Fencing, so part of it makes me wonder, You know, is it just, well, these sports aren't bringing in any money and we're paying out a certain amount of money, and so maybe this is a good time to be prudent and just get rid of it. Okay, you know, if that's the case, I have far less sympathy for them, Stanford, and far more sympathy for the athletes who are there. Now, in fairness, they are allowing the athletes to continue on their scholarships, which is the only the right thing to do. You can't cancel it. And this is for 2021, not 1920. But, you know, so after that, though, they're done. Now, my question is, will you reinstate them if things go back to normal? We get a vaccine and the world's economy improves. It's not like Stanford can't afford them. So I wonder if these things are gone for good, or they'll just sort of be cherry picked in terms of picking them back. I don't know. Time will tell.
Mitch,
let's go to the other thing, though. Let's go to the Ivy League now.
Oh, okay, yeah.
What were your thoughts when you read the Ivy League has now pushed all of its fall sports at least until the spring? That includes football. And it's not that anybody was really hanging on how's Penn going to do this year in the football league, but still, it could be a harbinger of things to come for other conferences.
At the place where college football started, which is the Ivy League. And Mitch, I was thinking this yesterday. Well, I think one of the last things we spoke about on Monday is there going to be a point in a month or two or whenever where our major sports leagues say, you know what? It was silly of us to even think that in this world with this virus that we could have sports this year, and we're just going to push everything back to 2021. That's what the Ivy League did yesterday. That's exactly what the Ivy League did. And they may look prescient and smart by December of 2020. This to me was a dramatic thing. Because, Mitch, you know, in the SEC or the Big Ten, they are going to be dragged kicking and screaming into a spring season for college football, right? I mean, and what did Harbaugh say yesterday? He doesn't think football will in any way advance the coronavirus. Really?
He said football is part of life, college is part of life, and, you know, if we're going to get on with it, let's get on with it. It might have been a little naive to give Jim Harbaugh the benefit of the doubt. But also, it comes from a place which isn't surprising. He is a major college football coach who wants to play college football when he plays college football and looks at it. And he said this, and it doesn't surprise me. You're going to hear a lot of coaches say this, Mike. These young men have worked their whole life for this opportunity. These young men deserve to have the opportunity to excel at their sport. These young men deserve to have the opportunity to advance to the next level, you know, to play here so they can get onto the NFL. All of which is not false, but it can also be used to make an argument that really is a little disingenuous. It's really about we want to play football now despite the dangers.
Mitch.
Now,
Mitch, what conversation are we having right now in this country? Whether to send even grade school kids back to classrooms at the start of the first semester, right? I mean, other than the virus, what's the major American conversation right now? It's that, right?
Should kids go back to school? Yep.
Yeah. And so not only we've skipped right past that in college, in colleges, right?
I think that one of the problems that the reason the Ivy League did what it did, and Mike, it's also, as you pointed out, one of the reasons that the big SEC schools are not making these announcements is because the schools, and in the Ivy League, schools still matter more than sports. The schools said, we're not going to have, some of our schools anyhow, are not going to have classes.
Harvard.
Yeah. Harvard said they're only going to take, 40% of the actual residence hall people back in, and they're going to have online classes for them. Well, here's the problem. If that's going to be your policy for your students, then it needs to be your policy for student athletes.
Yep.
And so they got caught in, you know, basically the tail wagged the dog. And they have to do this because otherwise at a school like Harvard or Yale, where parents of these kids and the kids themselves are going to say, wait a minute, you got a double standard going here. What am I, a working man now? I've got to come in and I've got to play football.
Right,
but
right.
You're saying that my friend, my roommate who doesn't play football, he doesn't have to come in and he doesn't have to take classes. So you can't have it both ways. Now, if Michigan were to come out and say, we're not going to conduct classes on campus this year, the football team and the basketball team would have a very, very hard time, I think an impossible one, to say, well, we're going to play anyhow. Michigan hasn't said that. Michigan said, we're going to welcome kids back on campus. We're not quite sure how it's going to work, but they're going to come back. And I think you're going to see this in SEC schools as well. And Mike, don't think, because we've just said, you've just pointed out, the football team pays for all this stuff. Don't think that in these meetings between the university presidents and the faculty and the sports programs, that they're not saying, hey, look, if we say to our students, you don't have to be here, we're going to be saying to our football players, you don't have to be here. And we can't do that because we need the money. So we better open our campuses to. You don't think that's happening, Mike?
Mitch, Paul Feinbaum, who is intelligent and observer of college sports that I have come across in my career, does a smart show. He's really one of the best people in the business. Okay. He said, I think yesterday, the reality is that the college football season is slipping away. And it, Mitch, it was in response to what the Ivy League has done. It is disingenuous at least and hypocritical at best to do what you just said. No, we're not letting students back on campus, or we're just letting freshmen back on campus, but we're going to go ahead and play the football season. How the hell do they explain that in any sort of logical or reasonable way?
You can't. You can't, which is why there's probably enormous pressure at those big football schools to admit the students back on, and this is really a tail wagging a dog, to have the students come in for classes because it's the surest way to make sure that the football team can come in for games. If you've really wanted to see, you know, sort of how things, where the priorities are, and again, I can't accuse them. I don't know. We haven't been in these meetings, so this is just supposition on my part. But I am supposing that that is a big part of the conversations that are going on because we see the reverse. The reverse is impossible. You can't not have kids on campus and have college sports. You can't.
It's
all you need is one person to challenge that, and it'll likely be upheld. So we'll see if this is a harbinger thing to come. But, Mike, you said this many times while baseball was fumbling and fumbling and fumbling and trying to figure out when to go. And we should say the same thing about college football. It's July. Right. We still haven't canceled any college football games. And it's July, almost mid-July. You know, players are back on campus already in loose workouts. And the first college football games are at the end of August. When are you going to decide?
Mitch, I've got a soon-to-be senior daughter going back to my school, Boston College. They are scheduled to start classes on August 31st. Okay, and I've been in conversation with the school about what their plans are for, you know, how the semester rolls out and what to do about Thanksgiving, you know, whether just send them home for, because my feeling is if you've gotten to Thanksgiving, you're playing with the house's money at that point.
Right.
Send them home and then hope everything gets a lot better by January.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah.
Rather than putting them on airplanes, putting them at family dinner table, it's a mess. But at least Harvard is saying we've made this. Okay. Step one. I think I'm right about this. I think, right. They're going to let freshmen come to campus. I think that's what's going to happen.
To be
on campus.
I'll have to look up that plan.
Yeah. But they simply said, being Harvard, we cannot in any way justify playing the Harvard Yale game this year with whatever percentage of kids are on our campus. They can't do it.
They're bringing up to 40% of undergraduates, including all the first-year students. In addition to them, they'll allow students who need to be on campus to progress academically to return as well.
Right, right.
By the way, if there are any international players on any of these sports teams...
Especially college basketball teams, yeah.
Yeah, that are in school... that are going to do online classes, you could forget about even having them in the program. According to President Trump and the most latest rules that they put in, executive orders, they got to go home.
Right.
I'm dealing with this with some of my kids from our orphanage in Haiti. If the school is not full-time, or at least halftime, you know, with classes. In other words, if they're doing online, international kids can't be here. They actually have to go home, even though they've got student transfers. It's an incredible law. And by the way, that basketball player from Serbia, or your place kicker from Australia or whatever, they're here on student visas. So you better hope that your campus has actual classes, or they can't even physically be here. So it's all a huge challenge. College sports remains a absolute huge challenge, as we are now within a month's shadow of when the football programs are supposed to start, and we still don't know what we're doing.
Didn't you want to cheer yesterday when you heard about college professors responding to what you just said, saying, if it means a kid not having to leave the country, I'll be in my classroom. They can, you know,
I hope there's more to it. But I mean, it's a terrible, this isn't about sports, but it's a terrible wedge. It's a, to put in between, to try to force schools to basically be open. Otherwise, we're going to make all your international kids go. It's a bit of a backhanded threat.
When you said your kids may be in peril, it just made me sick to my stomach. It makes me sick to think that they may have to encounter that.
Yeah.
That's America? That's America? That's the country that we're, Mitch, that's the country that we're supposed to aspire to be?
Well, this is a discussion for a different topic, a different program and whatever, but yeah, that's what we're dealing with. Before we finish up, one more word from our friends at Geico. Hey friends, did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of the money Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? You want your dog to make you breakfast in bed with Belgian waffles and a fresh fruit compote? As nice as that sounds, that's probably never going to happen. But at least there's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more. Mike, in other sports news, the Washington Redskins continue to flail around for a nickname. You know, we opened a retail store for charity here in Detroit, and I went to an advertising firm and I said, you know, I want to come up with a good name, you know, real catchy name. It took a day. Okay, it took a day. That's how long it took this clever advertising firm to come up with a plan and a name. A day. How long does it really take to come up with another name for the Washington Redskins? This doesn't have to be a nuclear experiment that needs to be tried from every angle. Pick a name, any name, and do it. Even the people who are suggesting that just call them Washington this year. It's not going to hurt. It's not going to hurt anything. And give yourselves a year to have a contest and to have people nominate. Because if you're feeling the pressure that the NFL season is going to start really soon, give yourselves a year. Just call yourself Washington this year. Nobody will know the difference. Why don't they do it?
Mitch, because Daniel Snyder is starting to remind you, you know, of one of those soldiers they found in the South Pacific. Remember, 5 years after World War II,
they still were fighting the war.
He hadn't gotten the memo that the war was over. Okay, the war is over, Daniel. You lost. Amazon, Mitch, you saw this yesterday. Amazon has pulled Washington Redskins merchandise from its site. Okay, we know what Nike has said, all right? I love the idea. The Redskins are going to remove the Native American imagery from the logo. Mitch, that ought to fix everything, shouldn't it?
Yeah. You just Redskins without an image. That'll help.
Yeah.
If you're this isn't a half pregnant, half, just get rid of it. It's a thing. Listen, I know that we could spend a lot of time saying this should have been done 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, whenever somebody protested it, whenever somebody brought up a good point. But, you know, sometimes change comes about like the way you bring down a tree. You axe at it and you axe at it. It's a series of small chops until finally that last chop fells a big tree. But the chop wasn't any bigger than any of the previous chops. It just was the cumulative effect of all of them. It's that point with the Washington Redskins. It doesn't have to be, and you don't have to say that it's because of Black Lives Matter, it's because of George Floyd. If that makes you feel better, that you don't want to feel like you're being held hostage to one particular event in history, then just consider it a series of chops that have reached the point where the tree has to go over. And I can't think of one thing, Mike, that will be over faster.
Faster. That's it.
Than when this is done.
And Max, they've got cover now. Everything that's happening in the world, they actually have some cover now.
They actually can look good. You know, I mean, they can actually look like they're responding to something instead of just, well, it's about time. And the minute it is changed, the next day, nobody will miss it. That's the thing about this. Other things that happen when justice is meted out, people are still, well, that wasn't fair. That wasn't right. You know, we're still talking about Riley Cooper 7 years later. But this, nobody will miss it. You're not going to have a bunch of people saying, I really miss the word Redskins, man. You know, why it was everything to me. It isn't.
Mitch, by the way, here's your quick history lesson. Tell me what you think. Well, I'm giving you the answer. Was the last NFL team to integrate? Oh, wait, I know.
Washingtons.
Okay. I was going to say we could we'll go to baseball and call them the Washington Senators, except Senators is kind of a slur too these days. So we can,
yeah. But I think you're just safer. Actually, Mike, I was going to say you're just safer calling it the name of the city, and even that isn't safe because Washington may be out. You know, so they may be the first team to have to change both the city's name and the actual mascot's name as well. But for the moment, anyhow, Washington is being left alive, although not in statue form in some places.
Mitch,
but
the longer it goes,
just eliminating
the longer it goes. I mean, you've said this. The longer it goes, the worse they look. Okay, this is like having a headache and refusing to take an aspirin or a Tylenol or an Advil. They can make this go away in a day. And it's you're right. It's not like there's going to be a controversy where people are going to be picketing outside FedEx Field because they changed it. I mean, there may be some dopes out there, but other than that, they make it go away. And in 2 weeks, they're merchandising their new whatever it is, the Washington Titans. That's an old AFL, whatever it is. Okay, the Washington. We could come up with 10 names that would work. Anybody could.
Honestly, though, Mike, I really think the more I think about it, the wisest thing would just be to say we're eliminating the name Redskins, and we're just going to call ourselves Washington this year. That. You allow yourself to say, we did the right thing by getting rid of the right thing. You don't make it about what you're replacing it with. Then, a year later, think of all the attention you'll get when you come up with a name that doesn't seem like you were doing it at knife point, to the people who were worried about this. So you just eliminate the offensive part. You don't replace it with something else. And then you wait a year. And by the way, this year's jerseys will be worth a whole lot because they'll be unique because there'll only be 1 year that you'll have Washington. Then you get to sell a whole nother form of jerseys when you introduce whatever it is, Titans, Generals, or all the rest of the stuff. And do it a year from now so you don't feel like we had to do it in a rush and now we're stuck with this name. I think that would be the smartest thing to do. It's easy to do. And quite frankly, Mike, in a world where the problems that we are talking about every Monday and Thursday on this show seem so ongoing. When will we get past COVID-19? When will we ever deal with race or anti-Semitism in its proper context? These are ongoing, long, long stretched out issues. To have an issue that can just take care of itself quickly is such a blessed relief. You almost feel like, please just do it for the rest of us to feel like something could be done that was quick. And that almost everybody agrees upon. So we'll see if that happens. The next show we do is on Monday, and we'll see if we have a chance, if they've done it by Monday. By the way, players, the NBA players going back now, I think it starts today, showing up in the bubble, a bubble that Commissioner Adam Silver has said might be popping. So I believe by Monday when we do our next show, we'll have a lot of insight into already how the Orlando experiment is working. I know it's not working real well for the New Jersey or the Brooklyn Nets.
I think they're down to
three. I don't know if they're going to field the team.
That's right, yeah.
They may
be
calling you, Mike, so be aware.
Hey. All right, I'm a good distributor. I'll just say that. I'm just going to say
that. There you go. That will do it for today's program. We do this, as I mentioned, every Monday and Thursday, the Sports Reporters Podcast. You can hear it on Stitcher and Apple and Spotify and Pandora and all the popular platforms. A comment or a rating is always welcome by you, our listeners, whom we appreciate greatly. We will be back, hopefully, with all three of us on Monday. Until we see you then, with Mike Lupica, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a great weekend.